And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this Tuesday morning. I hope everybody is doing well out there. Still rather chilly out there, 46 degrees. And joining me on the line right now, as he does every month, we are talking to the Kansas Attorney General, Derek Schmidt. Sir, good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. Doing great. Thank you.
Well, it's good to hear from you today, sir. And just a few things we'd like to discuss with you. And one of the things, obviously, that's been in the news a lot lately is you're backing the confirmation for Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, I'm very excited about the nomination of Judge Barrett. And I think the Senate is likely to confirm her, hopefully, as soon as next week. You know, there's been so much smoke around this, largely because it occurs in the middle of a very acrimonious presidential campaign. But you know, for me, we've watched Judge Barrett's career for a number of years as she went to the bench in the Seventh Circuit. She's been there 3 years and now obviously nominated for the U.S. Supreme Court. She is a very solid, very independent-minded jurist. And you know, at the end of the day, everybody who sits on the U.S. Supreme Court is tremendously qualified. That goes without saying. So that's not the issue. The issue then becomes one of their approach to the law. And Judge Barrett is one who, you know, it's clear reading what she's written on the Seventh Circuit. It is one, she's a textualist, an originalist, a constitutionalist, whatever you want to call them. She's a person who believes that the right way for a court to interpret the law is with humility, not with sort of bold policy leadership. And that everything has to be rooted in the actual text of the instrument, what the people of the United States adopted when they wrote down a constitution, and that if the constitution is to be changed, it should be changed by the people amending it, not by the court essentially rewriting it. You know, there's a little known historical fact here that I think has not been much of the conversation, but the way the Constitution provides for the selection of justices on our U.S. Supreme Court, it is a two-step process. The president nominates, and the Senate either confirms or doesn't. It provides its advice and consent. Neither of those steps is more important than the other. The president and the Senate are co-equal partners in determining who gets on to the Supreme Court. And while it is true that in the last, let's say, half century, most of the justices who have been elevated to the court have been nominated by Republican presidents. That is true. What is also true and much less known is that if Judge Barrett is confirmed as Justice Barrett, hopefully next week, this will be the first time since Herbert Hoover was president, the first time since Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, that a majority of the members of the U.S. Supreme Court were confirmed by a Republican majority in the U.S. Senate. So that's transformational, potentially, in terms of the court's outlook on how to interpret the law, and I think that's generally a positive. We're likely to have a majority of our justices whose view is you start with and end with the words on the page.
Absolutely, and like you said, just I mean, you don't interpret. You're basically not legislating from the bench. You're interpreting what the law actually is, and not legislating from the bench, so to speak.
Absolutely right. You know, there's a sort of a prevailing phrasing, I suppose, that the two choices are originalists and textualists, like Judge Barrett on the one hand, versus those who have a judicial philosophy of a living constitution on the other. And I always rebut that by saying I'm a firm believer that our constitution is a living document. It governs us and binds us and speaks to us and protects our freedoms as much today as it did at our founding, even in changed times. But the important distinction is our constitution lives because people change it, update it, and can modify it. People do that. The courts do not. And that's the fundamental distinction in philosophy, I think, that's an issue here.
And that's why, obviously, there's amendments to it, because things do change over time, and things need to be updated with that Constitution, which is, of course, why we have all the amendments that are attached to it as well.
Absolutely.
Also, another thing that that come up, and I completely agree with you on this, that that the state successfully defended against last minute election rule changes.
Yeah, ordinarily we're focused like a laser beam on what's happening with elections in Kansas, and of course we are focused on that this year. We had one case in which a group of plaintiffs tried to rewrite a Kansas statute that's designed to protect against voter intimidation at the polling places. It's the so-called buffer zone that says you can't politically proselytize, you can't electioneer within 250 feet of a polling place. That law has been on the books since the 1960s. A group of plaintiffs challenged it, said that it was unconstitutional. We successfully defended against that challenge, and the federal court upheld our statute. So we've done our job here at home on that, and we remain vigilant. But one thing that's a little different this year is that in states around the country, there is much more of an organized, orchestrated effort to try to get courts to rewrite the rules of the road in terms of how elections are run here in the final weeks leading up to the election. So we've seen at least half a dozen instances of this around the country. Normally you might see one or two, so the scope is much greater. And, you know, it's efforts to get courts to push back the deadline by which, you know, a mail-in ballot may be counted. If it comes in too late, the law says it shouldn't be counted, but there are efforts to get courts to say, yes, it shall. There are efforts to get courts to rewrite state statutory provisions or suspend by court order statutory provisions that set out the rules for how a mail-in ballot is validated. Some states, for example, Kansas is not one of these, but some states have a requirement that when you sign the ballot sign the envelope that you put your ballot in, you have to have that signature notarized. Whether that's a good idea or not, it's the law in some states. And there's an effort, organized effort, to get these changed by court order. We've really engaged on those in about half a dozen states around the country. And we've taken the position consistently that that state's law is whatever it says it is, not what a court may rewrite at the last minute. And the reason we've done that is, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look around the country and realize this has the potential to be a very close presidential election, and it has the potential to have some very close elections in some states for the U.S. Senate, where control is likely to be by a razor-thin margin. And Kansas obviously has an interest in both of those issues. We have an interest in making sure that that the outcome of the election is free and fair and is widely accepted and viewed as free and fair. And part of that is you don't let a small group of plaintiffs try to convince a judge here or a judge there to rewrite the rules in the last week leading up to the election. So we've engaged. And so far, we've had good success. We won 4 out of the 5 cases we've engaged on. The fifth one, pardon me, is still pending. We're hopeful we're going to win that. Now, the rest of the story is we haven't engaged in every case. We've been selective. And there have been a few that have gone the wrong way. The U.S. Supreme Court, for example, just yesterday allowed the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to rewrite the rules there. And so it's a very unsettling time, I think. But we're doing our best to try to keep things even keeled.
And getting back to the Supreme Court, of course, the thing that's been talked about quite a bit has been called court packing that could end up happening. And are you in favor of a proposed amendment to the federal Constitution to permanently set the number of justices at 9?
I am. I think that makes good sense. And in fact, just earlier this week, I joined a group called Keep 9. It's largely led by Democrats, although Republicans are coming on board. And I've also written to the sponsors in the U.S. House of Representatives of a bipartisan proposal that would propose to amend our U.S. Constitution with very simple phrasing. It just says there are 9 justices on the U.S. Supreme Court, period. The reason I think that makes sense, this is the second time in U.S. history, the first coming in 1937 during the Roosevelt administration, the second coming right now, when there's been sort of a loud public call in some quarters to, again, change the rules, to add to the number of justices on the U.S. Supreme Court, not because there's any argument that we need more for caseload purposes or administrative reasons or better justice or anything like that, but simply a raw, naked call to add justices because one side doesn't like what they think will be the outcomes of cases under the justices currently on the court. So they want to pack the court, add more, so they can dilute the influence of those who got on through the ordinary process we've all agreed to. And I think that has the potential to be just terribly damaging to our court as an institution. The Supreme Court, for all of its flaws, remains the most respected institution in the federal government, more than the presidency, more than the Congress, more than the bureaucracy. And I think that's something we want to really cherish, because at the end of the day, the court has only judgment. It can't force its will on anybody. It can only make decisions that are accepted by people, because we believe, the public believes, and accepts the idea that this is a free and fair and independent judgment, even if they disagree with the outcome. So politicizing the court's a terrible idea, and I think the way to combat that right now is if Americans were willing, just write into the Constitution that the number of justices we currently have is the number we shall have. That would take this whole notion of court packing off the table, and I think that would be a very good move for the long-term stability of our republic and independence of our court. So I'm hopeful. Like I say, it's a bipartisan proposal in the House of Representatives, and I hope it remains that way. I hope Democrats and Republicans both come on board and support this, because I think that's the most likely way to get it done for the good of the republic and the good of the people.
Yeah, usually if you can get something bipartisan on both sides, obviously it usually moves through pretty quickly, and hopefully we can get that through pretty quickly. This week, it's actually coming up this weekend, is law enforcement agencies around the state, they'll be collecting unused medications, basically so that people don't have these in their homes. They'll be able to get these out of their homes, because it can be a huge problem in the state, can it not?
Yeah, we have partnered with federal agencies now for a decade, twice a year hosting these drug take-back days, twice a year opportunities where people can clean out their medicine cabinets, take all those unused and unwanted and unneeded medications, and drop them off at a location free, no questions asked, and they're safely and securely destroyed, so they can't be diverted, can't be abused, they don't get flushed and wind up in our waterways, all of those good things that time of properly disposing of medications that each of us may have been entrusted with by our doctors. And so we really encourage people to do that. We weren't able to have our drug take-back day in the spring because of the early stages of the COVID pandemic and response, but we're having it this coming Saturday, October 24th, between the hours of 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. There will be locations across the state where law enforcement agencies and local communities set up drop-off spots and clean out those medicine cabinets and bring by those unneeded, unwanted medications for safe destruction. To find a location, you can go onto our website at www.ag.ks.gov, ag.ks.gov. And down at the bottom, there's a drug take back button. Push it, it'll link to the site that has all the locations in Kansas, and hope people take advantage of that.
Absolutely. A good way to get rid of those, get those out of there. And like you said, it doesn't get into our waterways by like flushing down the toilet or something like that. Definitely a good way to get rid of it. Well, sir, I appreciate you coming on today, taking a few minutes out of your day to talk to us, and we appreciate it. And we will talk to you again next month.
Well, thanks so much. It's been my pleasure. I say hello to everybody and wish everybody a good day.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. You have a fantastic day. All right.
Care.
That is Attorney General Derek Schmidt right here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. And we'll have that interview up on our website here in just a little bit. So be sure, if you missed any of that, we will have that up on our website here in about 30 minutes or so. So keep it locked here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. We have news coming up here in just a few minutes. And then we'll have Lisa Wilson from the Independence Chamber of Commerce at about 8:10.